Well, friends, this morning we're going to jump back into it's complicated stuff. But before we do that, I need to ask, I'm going to have you do something. So how many of you have a smartphone with you this morning? All right. So here's what I'd like you to do to start off is I would like you to Google anti-Catholic cartoons. Okay, so take some time. So it shouldn't take long and you'll want to look for images, right? Everybody there? Almost? All right, everybody raise your hand when you're there, right? I see that hand. All right. So here's my point, right? Because we don't want to, like, you know, Google and ask for things that are not good. But these cartoons were very popular at a point in time in America, right? Because Catholics were migrating to America, the great Protestant nation, right? That's a joke, by the way. But Catholics were migrating to America. And as Catholics were migrating to America, there was this idea that that they were going to bring all kinds of evil with them. There's one of those cartoons, if you look at it, it looks like alligators coming out of the water to gobble up your children. That the Catholics were going to come, and they were going to gobble up your children, and they were going to take your children away. And as a matter of fact, it took a long time for a Catholic to be elected president in the United States of America because of anti-Catholic sentiment and anti-Catholic propaganda. And believe it or not, friends, there was a point in time in the history of America where we had Bible wars. Doesn't that sound exciting? Bible wars, right? And what happened was, as our Catholic brothers and sisters came to America, in the school system used the Protestant Bible to teach, well, whenever the Catholics came to America, they said, okay, wait a second, I don't know that I would like you to use the Protestant Bible to teach my children, since there is some negative things in the Protestant Bible about Catholics. So I think you need to use the Catholic Bible to teach my children. And so then Catholics and Protestants could not come together to compromise, and believe it or not, friends, churches were burned and people were killed, all arguing over what Bible we were going to use in the public school system. Now, I, for one, this is a little controversial, but I, for one, am glad we don't use the Bible to educate people in our school system. Number one, I think I would like to be the one responsible teaching that to my children. I don't think that that is the school system's responsibility. Okay, it may be unpopular among Christians, but we'll all get over that. But I don't know that Bible wars is a great picture of what the church should look like. But this was something that happened in America as two groups of people could not come together and find some common ground. And it's a great example of how we can get these ideas about a group of people and paint them in a stereotype and paint them in a picture. As a matter of fact, I've got some grandparents who are convinced that I don't know that you can trust Catholics. And I'm like, well, I have Catholic friends. I have Catholic friends that love Jesus. And so I have all kinds of those folks in my life. But that's what happens, right? That's what happens when we build stereotypes of one another. And so today, I had to move this because there's some people that I can't see, right? And today, what I would really like to talk about is I want to talk about empathy. And empathy is taking the long walk around. Empathy is looking at a scenario and walking all the way around it and seeing every perspective. Looking at everything and kind of coming from one side and then moving to the other side and saying, okay, wait a second. Are there other ways to look at this. And if we're going to empathize with one another, and if we're going to take our differences and cast those aside, then we've got to be able to walk all the way around an issue, or walk all the way around an individual, so that we can bridge those gaps and get past those stereotypes that we build up of people that we may disagree with, or people that disagree with us. You know, whenever we talk about sexuality in the church, there are people in all sides of that equation. There are some people who go, "Well, Joe, I think gay marriage is perfectly fine, and I think the Bible supports that." And then there are other people on the other side of that and say, "Well, Joe, I don't know. I don't know that I agree with gay marriage, and I don't think the Bible supports that." And both of those groups of people have very valid points. And they didn't just arrive at those things overnight. They've researched, and they've asked questions, and they've tried to look at all the perspectives. As a matter of fact, I have friends in both of those camps. People I respect, people that I feel like have done a great amount of research, that they're not just coming to those things overnight, that's something that they feel very, very strongly about. You know, it's the same way with our race in our world, right? I mean, we have people from all different backgrounds. And if you grew up like I did, in a primarily white household, with white backgrounds and a white history, I never spent a whole lot of time with people of a different color until I got out and I moved around and I interacted with people who didn't look like me and interacted with people that didn't have the same background as I did. And here's our dilemma with this is, until we sit down with someone and actually look at their perspective and look at how they grew up and look at all the things that went on in their history, right, we miss a point. We don't do the work of empathy, bless you. We don't do the work of empathy and walk all the way around something and walk all the way around an issue. One of the things that Tina and I have tried to do with the girls, and I don't know whether we're successful at this. You guys can tell us when you're adults one day. But whenever we talk about an issue, we try to walk all the way around it. I mean, Tina and I have tried to say, we're not going to influence our girls politically. One day I hope they vote independently. I hope they don't vote like we do, and maybe they see things from a different perspective. But the idea is we've got to walk all the way around things. Protest is the same thing. Are there things in our world that we should probably protest? I think there are. I think that there are some things that you and I should stand to go, no, I'm not standing for this. I can't let this go. And somebody ought to go do something about it. And that's very important. But again, we've got to walk all the way around the issues so that we can fully understand one another, so that we can fully interact with one another and understand our backgrounds and where we come from and the biases that we may have as we come from our different backgrounds. But nothing ever gets solved, right, if we don't do that hard work. Nothing ever gets solved unless we're willing to step into another situation. And I would say this, in any kind of issue that goes on in our lives and in our world, there may be some things that we don't know. One of the things that I have learned, as I get older, I know less. Anybody else with me? I mean, as I get older, there is less I know. And there's another perspective, or there's another book. I mean, I will be on my deathbed going, man, there is another book I should read. You know, because there's always something that I've missed. You know, some of you this morning, how many of you had never heard of the Bible Wars before? Right? I mean, a lot of you had never heard of that before. No one ever knew. But you don't know unless you begin to do some research and begin to look at some things and try and figure some stuff out. But there's always something that we don't know. And from the very beginning, if we're going to have empathy with one another, we have to realize that relationship is a priority. And the church is in the business of relationship. Friends, the only thing you and I have to sell is relationship, right? I mean, let's think about this for a minute. If we're a company, if you and I are a business, the only thing we have to sell is relationship. That's it. We have nothing else. We got relationship with Jesus, and we have relationship with one another. And to be the church, we need to show the rest of the world how you do relationship and how you do it well. And believe it or not, Jesus did not say, I came that they might be right. Right? That is not what Jesus said. He said, I came that they might have life. I did not come that they might be right. Jesus doesn't care whether you're right or not. But that's not why he came. And believe it or not, winning an argument is losing the relationship. And some of you know this in marriage, right? That you were like, it's a throwdown, right? And I am going to win this. And you're going. But winning does not do any good. Some of y'all are looking at each other. That's good. So whenever I sit down and I do marriage counseling, I do like two, there are like four kind of things I do, and those are the four things I'm going to do. One of those is on conflict. And when we talk about conflict, there is the conflict box. And these are ways that we handle conflict. And for some of us, we yield. You know, we give in. You know, the spouse or the significant other says, hey, this is the way, and you're just tired of arguing, and you go, all right, whatever. Some of us withdraw, right? And we just leave. We leave the conversation, or we go for a drive, or we're walking out of it, and so we're done. For others of us, we win, and it's win at all costs. And I have thought through this, and somebody is going to get it. And so here it comes. I call winners fire hydrants, right? Because they know every point, and here it comes, whether you like it or not. And believe it or not, it's not going to put out a fire. And then up here you have resolve. And in the middle of all this, you have compromise. And these two here specifically I want to talk about. These two do nothing for the relationship. If you withdraw, you're just leaving the conversation. Now, in yielding, you may give in, but when you withdraw, you are walking away. Whenever people withdraw from a relationship, that's emotional divorce. That's a divorce waiting to happen because they've already started walking away, and they're not going to be a part of that anymore. And then on the other side of that is winning. And if we're just going to win at all costs, then what's going to cost is the relationship. And as Christians, right, because relationships are all we got. That's who we are. And as Christians, withdrawing and winning is never good. And I think, and I'm just going to shoot you straight here, and I'm going to tell you what I think. I think sometimes Christians withdraw when we don't talk and whenever we don't lift up one another. That's kind of withdrawing. Well, I don't know, I'm kind of indifferent, and I don't know, and so I just kind of back off. But somewhere in the middle of this, as we move up on this, we are putting priority on the relationship. When we compromise, we put priority on the relationship. When we look to resolve a conflict, we're putting priority on the relationship. Even when we yield, we are putting priority on the relationship. Because winning, here's the problem, winning is defensive control. And control, believe it or not, is an illusion. It's a defensive strategy. It's safety. And we're never going to win in relationship if we're just going to be safe, if we're just going to push people to a distance. We're never going to have authentic relationships if all we want to do is win an argument. And unfortunately, this is where I feel like our society has taught us, well, no, you've either got to win or you've got to lose. You either win or you lose. And whenever we're having complicated conversations and discussing difficult issues, win or lose cannot be how Christians operate. It has to be what is best for the relationship, what is best for what God wants to do in the lives of people. And our relationships, believe it or not, are really mirrors of ourselves. If we have tension in relationship, if we have chaos in relationship, if we can't get along with one another, our relationships are mirrors of ourselves. All of a sudden, they reveal some things about us that we need to do some self-examination and look in the mirror and do some work. Now, I love what Susan Scott says. She says, the conversation is the relationship. The conversations are relationships. If I value you, then I'll have a conversation with you. Then we can sit down and we can talk and we can find some common ground. And as we find common ground, what we will discover is that truth is not simple. Truth is complex because reality is complex. Think about this in marriage for a moment, right? So the last time, for those of you who are married, those of you in a serious relationship, when was the last time that everything from your perspective was right? Now think about it this way, though. So when you sit down and you have a conflict with your significant other, do you want them to see your perspective? Or do you just want them to see their perspective? Does that make sense? You want everybody's perspective. If I'm going to win in relationship, and if Tina and I have a conflict, I want to be able to see her perspective, and I want her to be able to see my perspective, and vice versa. That we look at everybody's perspective in the conflict and in the situation. That truth is complex because all of those things going on within us are complex. And we each come at things from a different perspective. And so what I want to do is I want to go back to James, the passage that Helen read earlier, and get to the heart of some of this. James says this. Now, what is the source of quarrels and conflicts among you? What is the source of this? Why do you have conflict? Why do you have all these problems? Why are these things going on? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You desire, but you do not have, so you kill. You covet, but you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. And these things happen. Now, James is being a little, he's using some terminology that maybe is not true. I don't know that anybody in the community has killed anybody or murdered anybody. But he's trying to make a point that all of these things come from within us simply because of our selfish desires and our selfish ambitions. And whenever we can't see someone else's perspective, all of a sudden we're just coming with our own agenda in our own ways instead of trying to build a relationship. And defensive attitudes kill conversations and they kill relationships. That everything goes downhill the moment I begin to be defensive, the moment I begin to put up a wall. And James would say, wait a second, what's going on within you? Now, I would say this. I'm going to give you just a little bit of history here. There was a point in time in America after slavery when poor whites and poor blacks began working together. And what was happening is they realized that all the plantation owners had all the land. And they said, wait a second, what happens if we would work together? Why can't we have land and why can't we work it? And so poor whites and poor blacks began working together to farm their land so that they could have a fair share of the economy. Well, the wealthy plantation owners decided, wait a second, we can't let this happen, so what are we going to do? And all of a sudden, that's where your Jim Crow laws came from, so that you could create division from between poor whites and poor blacks who had been working together. And so they wanted to create some division and some tension. And the hope was, is that the poor whites would go, well, at least we're not poor and black. But that's what happened. And what happens is they created an enemy that did not exist. And I think in our world, I think in our culture, in our American culture, Democrat, Republican, whatever you may be, that what happens is those that are in power create divisions. And they say, you know what, can we keep these people from working together? Can we just sow division? And they'll just think that they're enemies instead of finding ways to work together. And you and I as the church, we are called to work together. You and I are called to do things together. And the defensive attitudes that go on in our world and in our lives are not going to help. But freedom comes when we lose our big butts, right? Okay? And here's what I mean by that. Is when we're in conflict and when we're in disagreement, and you've said this and so have I, when someone tells you something that you disagree with, you say, yeah, but, right? And we've got to lose our big butts because what but means, right? But means I have no responsibility. But means I have no responsibility in this. You're just wrong. So but has no, I have no responsibility. But means you're wrong and I'm right. That's what that means. Every time you say, yeah, but, it means you're right and someone else is wrong. And you're unavailable to actually have a conversation and build a bridge with the person that you are in disagreement with. And if we're going to move forward, we've got to own our part. And then we've got to name the issues. And we've got to leave behind this idea of us and them. There's we. We are the church, right? We. There is no us and them. There is no west side. There is no east side. There is no in the middle, you know, right? That's not how this works. There is a we. We work together. We've got to be engaged with one another. And believe it or not, friends, God's goal is to change you, not other people. Anybody remember there was a hymn? Not my brother, not my sister, but it's me, O Lord, standing in the need of prayer. Not the preacher, not the teacher, but it's me, O Lord, standing in the need of prayer. God wants to change you. He doesn't want to change your neighbor. And if God's going to change you, you've got to be willing to change. You've got to be willing to say, wait a second, what is my investment in this? How do I own my part? And the best way to do this, the best way to kind of own your part is this, is one, be a student and not a critic. By the way, I think you ought to write these down. But be a student and not a critic. When there's something you don't understand, be a student. If you don't get gay marriage, be a student. Be a student. If you don't understand why people protest, be a student, not a critic. If you don't understand Democrats, if you don't understand Republicans, be a student instead of a critic. If you don't understand those things, be a student and not a critic. Sit down and have a conversation and get to know one another. That's part of it. Number two is don't criticize what you don't understand. I see this all the time. This primarily happens in my older adults in my family, is they have got all kinds of criticism for things that they have no clue about. In every family gathering, you got some of these people in your family, right? You may be that person in your family. But every time we sit down at a family meal, we have got 20 million opinions and no education about what in the world they're even talking about, right? Right? I know that doesn't happen in your family, right? It just happens in mine. And then number three is this, keep your mind open. Open your eyes, open your mind. So here's what I want to do to wrap this up is this. This past week, I did a funeral for someone that I had never met. And we had never interacted, and I'd never met this family. And I said yes, because I very seldom turn down funerals, because that's always an opportunity to look for something good and to help someone get through something. And so what I did was, is I went to Leavenworth, Kansas, and I spent a few hours getting to know the person that had passed away. And as I went in, I had to say, Lord, get rid of any agenda I have. I need to sit down with this family, and I need to get to know their son that I had never met. In as short amount of time as possible, I've got to get to know this person. And we sat, and we talked, and we prayed, and we listened. And here's what I didn't do. Well, let me tell you why your theology doesn't work, right? Well, let me tell you how Scripture works. Let me tell you how God works. Now, would that have been a good idea? No. It's a horrible idea. But as a pastor, I wanted to sit down with them and learn. Help me learn about your son. Help me learn about your family. And the reason I share that story is this. Is I think we need more of that with one another, right? That I need to sit down with people I disagree with and get to know them. And let's gain some empathy with one another and let's walk all the way around. Final thing. In the book of Ephesians, chapter 2, verse 10, the Apostle Paul is writing the Ephesian Christians. And he shares and he says this. He says, you are God's workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works. And the word that Paul uses for workmanship is a Greek word, poema. And that's where we get our word poem. And a poem is beauty. It's art. It communicates beauty and art. The other meaning of poema is fabric. And fabric is woven together. And I'm not going to rip my shirt, right? That would not be a good thing. But to me, what Paul is communicating is this. Is number one, the church, when it is at its best, is God's poem to the rest of the world. Number two is this. Is that fabric is all together. That we are all individual threads in this giant fabric. And if we're going to be the church, and if we're going to be unified, and if we're going to show the world, right? If we're going to show the world what relationship looks like, which that's who we are, because that's all we got, then we need to remember that we are a part of one fabric. Whether you're male, female, Democrat, Republican, gay, straight, no matter what you are, we are all a part of one fabric. But if we're really going to spend the time to do what that looks like, that means we got to get to know one another. That means we've got to sit down face to face and have conversations instead of building the walls that our world builds. Friends, let's not be the world. Let's be the church. And friends, we're going to share communion this morning.